Welcome to the Women at the Top Network author interview series. My name is Regina Barr, and I'm the founder of the Women at the Top Network. I'll be your host today. Women at the Top, for those of you who don't know us, is a community of like-minded women who share the Watt vision and mission. And our goal is to empower aspiring women to lead. And we do this by providing information, training, and connections. Joining me today is Sue Hawk, author of Chasing Perfection, Shatter the Illusion, Minimize Self-Doubt, and Maximize Success. But before we get started, let me just tell you a little bit about Sue. As a best-selling author, keynote speaker, certified EOS implementer, certified business coach, WPO chapter chair, and globally recognized award-winning seminar leader, Sue Hawks brings over 25 years of experience to her clients. She is CEO of Yes and has designed and delivered dynamic, transformational programs for thousands of people. Sue has received numerous awards, including the Dreamkeeper Award, recognized by the Governor's Council for her leadership program, the Regional U.S. Small Business Administration Women in Business Champion of the Year Award, the Exemplary Woman of the Community Award, and Women Ventures Unsung Hero Award. Sue's passion is helping people design and live successful, fulfilling lives through powerful leadership, effective communication, no-nonsense coaching, and healthy teamwork. On that note, please join me in welcoming Sue to our call today. Sue, welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go ahead and jump right in and get us started, Sue. And I always like to hear a little bit about the backstory on a book. And I'd like to know from you, what is it about this particular topic of perfection that made you decide to write Chasing Perfection at this time?
Oh, it's a great question. And, you know, thanks for inviting me to it. What I would tell you is I worked with leadership teams, entrepreneurial leadership teams for the bulk of my career. And what I would tell you is, you know, most of us struggle with this entire idea that we've got to do things not only well, but exceedingly well. And that's where the perfectionism kicks in. And I think for myself in both coaching and working with them through the various outlets I have, it's always unrealistic because as soon as you accomplish something, then you're in a position of raising the bar yet again. And because, again, a perfectionist is going to go, that was great, but here's what could be better. And as success-motivated people, I think we get ourselves in a trap of over time, and I'm talking years, not just minutes or days or months, all of a sudden you're going, what if they find out I don't know what I'm doing? And I'm making this up as I go, and it starts to be this increasing mound of doubt that accompanies this, you know, overachieving promise of performance. And so I think in watching it, I personally struggle with the very same thing. And I started saying, you know, we've got to be able to talk about this and get to more people and help them work through it because it's unrealistic and it's going to kill us over time.
Well, part of it, right, it's unsustainable as you're, I think, getting to that and the wear and tear on yourself. Gosh, what a burden, you know, walking around feeling
exactly.
Like you have to, like you said, being perfect is one thing, but then being super perfect, that's a whole other challenge and issue as you're noting here. So I think, you know, it's interesting because sometimes I think there's a gender component to that. And so, you know, I'm curious to know, through your experience of working with both men and women and corporate leaders and small business owners, how is perfection affecting women in business? And is this different from how it does affect the men?
Another fabulous question. You know, I work with both. And what I would say is I have even more experience with, I think, women than men because the bulk of my clients are there. But you know, I think what women do is internalize it, and I think men cover it up externally with maybe a falsely perceived confidence. And so I think we lack the confidence. I think for more women, it ends up showing up. I do think it's different, although I think it affects both. I think for women, what we do is we start to doubt ourselves, and there's all the different research, and I know you're familiar with it, where even in interviewing for a job, a woman would have to have 90% of what a job description might require, where a man, if he's about 50% of the way there or so, he'd say, oh, I'm qualified. And a woman would go, oh, I'm missing all of that. Instead, he'd see, here's all the things I've done, and that would make me qualified for what I've not yet done. And so I think it starts to erode both your sense of self and that confidence level, but also I see women take it to, because they're doing more to accomplish more and almost overcompensate for that lack, they don't care for themselves as well.
Right.
I think it can come across as anger instead of, you know, where you start to get kind of crispy and irritable around things that shouldn't or wouldn't normally bother you because the doubt is taking over.
You know, that's interesting, right? That you said that sometimes when that's happening, we can come across as angry. And, you know, the bandwidth of behavior that's acceptable for women in business, in the corporate realm, however you want to define that, is much smaller than it is for the bandwidth for men, you know, to react to.
So accurate.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. And then, you know, I think also there's a cultural component. Do you find that, you know, with the differences between men and women, it's sort of how we're culturized or, you know, in overcoming and trying to claim our space, if you will, that we have to work twice as hard, or in the past we may have had to do that. And then what happens is we train people in to expect that, and then the ball just gets higher and higher and higher. Do you find that to be part of that experience, do you think, between the difference between men and women?
Absolutely. And I outwardly say in one of the chapters in the book, Backward and in Heels, I say you have to work twice as hard for half the credit and that we have to stop complaining about it. And your point about the emotional bandwidth is so accurate. I was talking with a group of women recently, and I just want to highlight this because it's spot on. And we were talking about anger and what do you do to deal with it. And a number of women in the room were like, oh, I work out and I do these things. And I was saying, you know, I do these things at my gym with my trainer called ball slams, you know, where you just literally pick up a medicine ball and slam it into the ground. And it feels fabulous and it's harmless to anyone and it just works. And, you know, people like you were laughing, but there was a faction in that room, Regina, that I was struck with that they said, I don't get angry. How can you get it? And it was a completely, I sat there and I said, you've got to be kidding me. You have to get angry at times. That's a human emotion. The Dalai Lama recognizes it, for goodness sakes, and he meditates 4 hours a day.
Right.
You know, but there is not a social acceptance or a space for us to do it. And if we can't even talk about it, oh my goodness. You know, we have work to do there, a lot.
Yes, and I have to tell you, while I'm chuckling a little bit, have you ever heard of something called the Damn It Doll?
No.
So Google it. Google it. And if I, so I have a vintage one. So I found one in a thrift store at one point. And then ironically, one year, one of my girlfriends made them as client gifts. And so I have one that she made me. Yes, but you can. I have Googled it. You can find it on Amazon. So anyone on the call today who has an interest in perhaps a smaller version and maybe a little easier version to obtain of the medicine ball concept, take a look at the Damn It Doll. So anyway, we have to have a little fun, right, Sue?
I like it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So in your book, you talk about the barriers that eliminate your full leadership potential. And I think all of us are striving, you know, to attain that leadership potential. So what's a practice that leaders can begin to create a positive impact immediately? You know, something that could, you know, show some quick results to kind of motivate people to keep going down that path?
Well, there are a lot of them, but I think the most significant one I've found that is neglected the most and hard to do, frankly, is to create clarity breaks. And Gino Wickman advocates this, and I'm using his term for it, but it's truly to get in a practice of creating space in your week, meaning with discipline every single week for an hour to maybe an hour and a half. You go somewhere, no technology, no agenda, not a space to write your to-do list out of your head. And if you do need to do that, you do it well before that, and then go and use that time to dream, to wonder, to wish, to just invent and invite and let your brain wander. And over time, really very short periods of time, within a month of doing that, say 4 or 5 times, you can start to let go of things that no longer serve you. You can start to get perspective on problems. It creates so many benefits in how you are, in your peace and sanity, in your day in, day out busyness. But we don't have any nooks and crannies anymore. Our devices have filled every viable space, and people just aren't quiet. And to be quiet with just a pen and paper, no device, and to capture your thoughts is one of the most powerful exercises I could offer anyone.
So I'm just curious, because I'm a practical, tactical kind of a gal. So when you, I'm assuming you do these clarity breaks. So where would be a place that you would go for your clarity break? What would be some place that you'd say, this is a good spot, or you would suggest? So we have people who are working in a corporate office, you know, racing out at the end of the day, get home for dogs, kids, spouses, family, and kind of in this whirlwind until. So let's say you pick a day and you carve out the 90 minutes. Where would you recommend that people go, or where do you go, just to give us an example?
Well, I do best in nature, and this is where I violate slight rulings on mine. So I do a talk to text if I'm mobile, because sometimes when I'm out hiking or walking, I will capture it electronically then. So I put a mic in my phone, so I'm not actually dealing with the phone, but I do like a talk to text or a note and do a voice memo of my thoughts. So I'll just let my brain go, and then I'll hit the button when I need to record some thoughts. And then I get back and turn it into, you know, something that I can physically write down, because the act of writing with pen and paper is powerful. So I don't type them up. The second thing I would tell you is, you know, you can do a quieter version of, say, a Starbucks or coffee shop. You want to be at one where it's not bustling and busy. But if you can tune out external, you know, bustling, you do that. You want to go somewhere outside of your home and outside of work, typically, where you feel just comfortable and at ease. And that's different for everyone. I've had people say, oh, I do it in my car, and I'll go, not ideal, because you're still engaging your brain. So it's right. Got to be somewhere where your brain frees up, you know, and that's going to be, you know, again, quiet, optimal space. I always, if it's winter in Minnesota, I'd tell you find a fireplace somewhere.
Right.
You know, things like that where you're just going, I'm cozy, I'm relaxed, my brain is not working now.
That's great. Well, I'm glad you said the piece about nature, because I do best if I can be moving like you suggested, you know, if I could be out walking, because there's just something so rejuvenating and re-energizing, and sometimes just letting your, like you said, your mind wander. So thank you for sharing that, because that, I think, just helps give some practicality to folks that, you know, this is not like you have to, you know, go off in the deep woods and, you know, try to do these things, you know, that you can carve out a piece of time and just find, like you said, it could be a cozy nook at a coffee shop. And you know what, if you go during the off busy times, you could probably find a nice little cozy spot. And some of those, Sue, have fireplaces. So that's all good.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So let's talk about some of the challenges that women leaders face in the workplace. And as you probably know, when working with women, it's sometimes it's confidence and sometimes it's competence, but more than not, it's confidence, right, in certain areas of business. So
correct.
how would you tell those on the call today, or how would you help them create a certainty of self that is unwavering and uncompromising when they're in the workplace, or they're faced with a challenge, or, you know, somebody is making them feel doubtful? What would you, how would you counsel them? What would you suggest?
Well, you know, and I don't mean to sound shamelessly self-promoting, but that really is why I wrote the book. So I wouldn't say there's a one thing to do. I think there's a many things to do. And I think it's working a number of practices with consistency over time is how you do that, because it didn't erode over time. It eroded over time. It didn't just go away. I think when you're spontaneously in a situation, the best thing you can do is buy yourself space and time. And I have told people, you know, there is no criticism to saying to someone, you know what, I really need to give that some thought right now, or I'm not prepared to answer well, and I really want to get you a thorough answer, or putting, you know, that kind of a gap so you can collect yourself and give it some strategic thought and let your, usually in those situations, you're emotionally hijacked. Mm-hmm. And you're not at your best logical self. So you have to have time and space. So if it's not a situational thing, the point of the book is to read the book and do the work in it, because, you know, as we need to do this, there are many things we need to do around self-care and brain space and how we lead and what we are doing that we don't like and we still hang on to for who knows what reason, because it served us in years gone by, but it may not be useful now. And so the book is a series of things to do that. That's basically the point of the book, is to do the work in it, not just to read it. It is not a book to be read cover to cover. It's read the chapter that speaks to you, do the work in it when and if you need another chapter. There are some that are more applicable than others, and do the work. Don't just say, oh, that was fun, good, next thing.
Right. And I think that for those listening on the call, I think is probably an important piece of advice. Don't feel like it's one more task or chore that you got to pick up a book and then, you know, go through it and work it. You pick and choose, to your point, what's mm-hmm. resonating with you or what's, you know, bubbling to the top, and then work that piece of it. So I think that's great advice. Love the advice you gave about taking space and time and not just allowing yourself to sort of, as you mentioned, be emotionally hijacked, because I find that many women, when they're in a situation of duress, feel the need to instantly start speaking, which typically does not serve mm-hmm. them well. So take some time and space, collect your thoughts, let the adrenaline settle down before responding. So I think that was great advice too. Now, you talk about vulnerability and the ability to ask for help, and I think that's hard for a lot of women. And you also talk about the imposter syndrome and how that can lead to self-doubt. So tell us a little bit about what can we do to help minimize that self-doubt when it crops up.
You know, what I would do, and I don't know if you want to do this, but I want to make sure anyone listening knows what imposter syndrome is. And I've found when I've been talking in audiences, just promoting the book, a number of people have never heard of that, even though for many of us it's been around and we've learned it. So I want to back up just one step, and that is two women psychologists in the 70s originally thought it was a woman leader thing. And so they studied hundreds of women leaders and named this syndrome, imposter syndrome, meaning the more successful you got, that as you were ascending, your level of doubt also increased. That you didn't get more confidence with more success. You got less confident and you felt like a fraud, and that you started to say, what if they find out? I mean, I'm just tap dancing and making it up. And about 20 years later, the women were put on the spot and they said, why do you think that's a female thing? A number of men have looked at the results and said, hey, you know, this is a leader thing. This is not just a woman thing. So they redid the same test and did both genders. And what they found was that, in fact, it was the same, and that 75 to 80% of the population struggles with this. And in those staggering numbers, what they also found, which is kind of humorous but accurate, is that the other 20 to 25% are the real imposters. So if you've not had this experience, you really are the imposter. And so it's a very normal thing. And so for me, knowing that, that gives me permission. And so the things that you can do to minimize this are, number one, talk about it. You know, Brené Brown has given such wisdom in this domain and so much permission to all of us to be able to say, hey, you know, if I look at vulnerability in you, Regina, it is courage, it's daring, it's powerful, and I'm so grateful because that impacts me so well. But if I think about it for me, and I have to be the one who's vulnerable and sharing that I'm doubtful and you might find out I'm a fraud, that's weakness, and I don't want to go first. And so the very first thing I tell people is to practice giving themselves permission to say, hey, you know what, this is really hard for me, or I really apologize, I screwed this up, or I'm really scared because I don't know what to do. I've never grown my company that way, or I've never worked with people in this situation, or literally right before this podcast, I had a leader call me and say, I think one of my leaders has early onset Alzheimer's. What do I do? And she's in tears. And I'm going, wow, you know, that is a powerful invitation right there. And I'm saying, you are such a good leader for caring like this. And when you can greet someone that way with that kind of permission, you have to have a network of support. You have to know other leaders are challenged, whether that's through a peer group or a coach or whatever mechanism, so that you can practice in a safe zone. And trusting your intuition, because our intuition is so strong, but we often are muting it because of all the devices, as well as logic trumps intuition just about every day in the Western world. And so how do we get better on saying, you know, my gut isn't lying when it's going off. I have to actually make that valid and pay attention. So I think all of those things, along with, again, many practices, allow you to start to say, self-doubt is something that comes with leadership. It's a pressure-filled thing. That's normal. It's okay.
Well, I love that you referenced the intuition, because I think intuition gets a bad rap, and you know, it's so often the ability for us to recognize that intuition and then utilize it that really helps us make better decisions. I had a situation where I was having a medical situation and went to the doctor, and I had had an ultrasound and it had come out fine the first time. And the doctor's like, well, you know, the swelling is going down and, you know, I really think you're okay. I don't think you need to go again. And I looked at the doctor and I said, I don't know how else to tell you this, but I have a bad feeling and I feel like I need to get another ultrasound. And sure enough, what they were looking for the time before, it was actually a DVT, a blood clot in my calf, they found the second time around 2 days before I was getting ready to get on an airplane. So that's not what you want to be doing. And it was for quite a long trip. So I was grounded for three weeks after that. And so the next time I came in, my doctor had a resident with her. It was a young man. And she said to him, Regina is one of my patients. When she tells me she has a feeling or something, she's like, I listen to her, and you need to be mindful of that too. So, you know, our intuition, if we are tuning into it, can help us in a lot of situations. So I appreciate you bringing that up, because, again, I think that...
Well, thank God you did.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what would have happened if I'd gone in a different direction. And, yeah, it's very interesting. So I digress a little bit. The point is that, you know, our intuition can help us, I think, overcome some of that self-doubt if we begin to trust ourselves. And I think that's part of what you're trying to say to our audience today. So I do appreciate that. And I did not know the little factoid about the other 20% being the imposters. That kind of, I think you just made a lot of people on the call today or in our audience feel really good about themselves. They're like, yeah.
Hopefully.
So, yes. Well, we are winding down on time today, Sue. But before we go, I always like to ask, what would be one thing that you would like our listeners to take away from our conversation today? So if they were only going to remember one thing from our time together, what would that be?
You know, the simplest message I would give every leader ever is no one is on this earth to be or do what you are, and you are imperfect just like I am, so you might as well be it fully and turn up the volume and absolute permission to go for it and quit comparing yourself to what other people's gifts are. Champion them and turn up your volume.
I like that. So, ladies, there you have it. On Chasing Perfection, embrace your own gifts or imperfections and turn up the volume. So that concludes our interview with Sue Hawkes today. Sue is the author of Chasing Perfection, Shatter the Illusion, Minimize Self-Doubt, and Maximize Success. And just a reminder that you can learn more about Sue, her book, and programs at chasingperfection.net. And that's one word. I'll repeat it, chasingperfection.net. So thank you again so much for being here today, Sue. Really appreciate it. Very informative. So for those of you on our call, please join us next month on Thursday the 14th as we talk with Alana Muller, author of Coffee, Lunch Coffee, A Practical Field Guide for Mastering Network. And on that note, I want to thank all of you for joining me today, and have a great day.